recording that you'll be able to download. Okay, so here we go. Just a couple of things up front. And the first one is, I want to play catch-up. And catch-up means there's certain information that everybody needs, or at the very least needs to be in this recording. One is, for those of you who are looking for ICF, CCEs, CCEUs, whatever it is that you want to call it, hours, this is how it works for this course. And the way it works is that for the live attendance to the session, you can use it for the 1.5 hours, the 90 minutes, 1.5 hours, for the core competencies categories. However, if you do not attend and you simply listen to the recording, it then qualifies only under the resource development category. And the reason this is that they want people to be able to get interaction that helps people calibrate in a live fashion. And one doesn't know necessarily in a recording, listening to a recording session of self-study, that that interaction is happening, nor is the calibration. So I just want to be true to what it is that the ICF has for us. Second thing to know is that the recordings will be up by Thursday morning after the session. That doesn't mean 1 a.m. That means in a reasonable time the next day. Okay, I'm not. You know, it's like Thursday morning. If I go there at 12:31 a.m., am I going to get there? Maybe not. Okay, just for clarification. Also, you'll get an email from me on the resource page and the links about that if you opted in via the welcome email. So please, if you have not yet opted in via the welcome email, please do so. That way, I can stay in touch with you and let you know where things are and what's. And maybe even pose some new questions, but at the very least, you'll get a reminder that says, hey, guess what? Your session's going to be here, you know, on Wednesday. And then the last little piece is down at the bottom of that welcome email, there was a bonus thing there. And if you didn't scroll down, then please do if you still have it, because you will need that email, number one, that is there for a free session contest, which is for you to start to look at the structure of the questions and what makes that question do what it does. So I put some questions down there for you to answer, and then please do submit those if you want to play in getting a free session. That's it. Let's get rocking. Any questions? Okay. Well, here we are. So. Slide number one, we can see that already. And one of the reasons why I wanted to share a brief story about this is because my entire career in coaching is a function of one or two questions. And just to let those of you who don't know me all that well know, I came up through the 70s and 80s, you know, as one of those people who took a lot of workshops on personal development, et cetera, and tried a lot of success programs, and I found that not many of them fit me. And inevitably, when I took the program and it didn't fit me, and I mentioned it to somebody, they said, you didn't do the program right. There was no one who actually said, maybe this program doesn't fit you. Let's see if we can either custom tailor it or just, you know, refund your money because it was a misfit to start. So I'd been processed more than whipped cheese at that point in time, and I had my own coach, and he said, well, I think you should go to this workshop. I think it'll be really good for you. And I went, okay, you're my friend, you're my coach, I'll try it one more time. It was a coach run, it was a class run by a man named Thomas Leonard, who was just beginning the coaching profession in New York City area. And I attended this workshop with, I'd probably say if we are X percentage, you know, like 95% water or whatever it is that people say about our body, that entire percentage of water was skepticism in me. And so what happened was I found myself.
I attended this workshop with.
Okay, if you do have your speaker on. If you are listening to this through your computer, please mute your speaker and just be on the phone, because it'll feedback. Okay? So, I was attending a workshop, and at a certain point in time, he wanted to give a demonstration of what he called coaching. And so I said, okay, and I raised my hand going, oh, yeah, here we go. One more success formula I'm going to fail at, and then it's going to be my fault. And he asked me a question. He said, after I told him my situation, my scenario, he said, when you've been successful, what methodology did you use? And I was stunned. And later on, I deconstructed the question, but I was stunned because nobody had ever asked me that. And as you listen to that question, you'll hear that built into that question are minimally three things. One, the assumption I'd been successful, which, given I'm still alive on the planet, there had to be some truth to that. Two, that I had a methodology. And three, that I might know something about it, even if I didn't know I knew. So I played, and I told him. And then he said, so when you ran into obstacles, what character traits did you call on to overcome them? And again, I was stunned, because here was somebody assuming that I had qualities and traits in myself that could overcome obstacles, that I had used them, and that I could find something out about them and leverage them for my future. So the process went on for probably another 15 minutes. And it actually didn't matter where I went at the end of it, and I don't even remember where I went at the end of it, but it was the experience of that engagement, interaction, that really shifted me, and I felt for the first time honored in my life as an individual, and I felt like I had some clarity about why many things had not been successful for me. It's because I had been attempting to be a clone of other people. Not that using other people's expertise isn't valuable. It is, but if it didn't become my own and have it attuned to the flavor called me, I was trying to be something that I had no intuition about, which was to try and get the intuition that would come through that person instead of the intuition that would come through me. And so I said, I want this. And that began my fascination with coaching. I'd always been a curious human being and always studied people, and I found a place for me to use all of that curiosity and my fascination with what makes people tick. And so I say that because in looking back at those questions, it was also part of the journey of me seeing the power of questions and recognizing that what the world had become was a place of answers. And we gave answers the throne of God instead of questions. But we were born with questions. As a child, we had many, many questions until we got it beaten out of us. We were always curious about what grass tasted like, or what happens if I pull the cat's tail, or, you know, whether we verbalize those questions or not is less important than how curious we were about how things work. And what is our place in all of how things work? So we're born into questions more than we're born into answers. But we get that trained out of us over the course of time. So that's the genesis of me getting into questions. So I studied it, and I practiced, and I studied it, and I kept deconstructing them, and I went after Socratic questions and checked all of that stuff out to find out, Socrates was a pretty good question asker. And that's where this was born, as well as a 20-year career in coaching, out of perhaps no more than five questions. And my entire life shifted for a long time and for much the better. So that's the game we're up to. So here's what we're going to be playing with. We're going to do a brief visit to Basics Town, because I'm going to assume that you all know something about questions already, but I want to remind you of some of the basics, because I find that being grounded in the basics helps us inform the more advanced application of those basics. And then we're going to play with one of the single most important elements of questions, which is context. So before I move on, any questions at this moment? Okay, cool. So here's the context for masterful questions. This is part of it. And the basics are this. In baseball, there is hit the ball, throw the ball, catch the ball, and run. If you can do those things, you can play baseball. Anybody can play baseball if you can do those things. From there, once those basics have the fundamentals to such a high degree of mastery, you can start to apply them in different scenarios, like in baseball, for those of you who know it, you know, a suicide squeeze play from third base, a hit and run play, baseball with a player on a base, and then you hit and they run at the same time, or a double play. All that kind of stuff happens out of the basic functions. So I just want to revisit those so that we're all on the same page moving forward. So first I'm going to share what the game is really about, and then these are the basics: coaching presence, listening, respectful assumption, who versus what. In the realm of context for masterful questions, these are the basics. They're very powerful. And some of them are contextual shifts that need to be made in order to have mastery. So here's what the first contextual shift is. This is what the game is about. The solution is already there. Now, I don't know how many people on the call have ever played Sudoku, that particular kind of puzzle. And it's usually presented as a puzzle you have to solve, much like a client coming to you with a scenario, a situation I have to help them solve. They have a problem. Let me solve the problem. Here's a Sudoku puzzle, and it looks like solve this problem. If you've ever played it, what you come to recognize is that actually the solution is already there, and we go about the process of revealing the existing solution. We go about the process of perceiving where the numbers must go in order for this solution to occur. And the way they create Sudoku puzzles is that they have an algorithm which basically fills in a bunch of squares with numbers, and then they subtract out the numbers to make it to whatever degree of difficulty they want the puzzle to be. And sometimes it's either more numbers, sometimes it's situational numbers. But the recognition that the solution with all of your clients is already there, it's just obscured or not connected with. And so it's not a question of figuring it out. It's a question of helping them perceive it through the inquiry process, among others. Sometimes the situation they present us with, there's lots of variations. It might be like the left-handed small puzzle, just a fairly simple one. It might be like the middle puzzle, very complicated. It might be like the far right one, a very strange shape, you know, a pentagram. And it might be like the one below, a kind of artistic puzzle. But nevertheless, in all those cases, the solution is already there. We are just not close enough to it to see it or to experience it. So this question occurs, which is part of the larger context of engaging with clients. How does arriving at the already existing solution affect the bigger picture of meaning in one's life? So I just want to open the call to just a little bit of conversation about that question, either from your experience or from an experience you've witnessed with a client or with someone else. So who'd like to comment, to engage?
This is Pam. I'll dive in and have a go if you like.
Sure.
It reminds me, if I could give an example of a client, it reminds me of a client I had who was in one area of this country, and somewhere within her knew that a move back home was the right thing for her, that somehow things weren't right where she was, that she didn't fit, and that things weren't right for her in the environment she was in. And through the coaching process at some point, and I don't think either of us would say there was one big aha moment, she really embraced that the solution was to move back home. And it changed everything in her world and put the true meaning of it and everything that she was supposed to be, both from a professional and personal standpoint, back in its right place. And that's probably a poor explanation.
Well, I hear exactly what you're saying, and I hear a number of things in what you've said. Mm-hmm. It's that she got reconnected to what was true for her.
Yeah.
For one.
Yeah.
And the other thing that you said that I also like pointing to, because it actually addresses some of the challenges that people may or may not have with respect to questions, which is it's a cumulative process.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
And we all feel like, as if we're going to be masterful in coaching or masterful with questions, that we have to have the silver bullet question.
Mm-hmm.
That, like,
and it wasn't
bang.
That.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
It
instant
that.
Transformation, just add question.
Mm-hmm.
And that puts so much pressure on the process that it kicks us back into our intellect trying to figure out what that question is, which doesn't
mm-hmm.
allow us to be attuned to the question that comes through intuitively that is going to move it forward in that accumulation,
mm-hmm.
and that's what's needed rather than let me help them make a quantum leap at this moment in time, and I need to get that
mm-hmm.
single only question that's going to do that.
Mm-hmm. I really like the fact you said it's cumulative, because I couldn't have expressed it in that way. And there was some huge shift, and it probably wasn't even in a coaching conversation, but somewhere in the process, there
yes.
was a quantum shift.
Yep.
And her life has changed forever.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
But her life was changed and is
yeah.
changed dramatically. And she said, and I'm not boasting here, but I just thought it was an interesting phrase that she used. And she said, sent me a beautiful thank you note and said, you were the spark that's ignited my life, or words to that effect. But neither of us could have, if you asked her, I don't think she could articulate it any more than I could, to say it was that moment, it was that thing I said, it was that question.
Right.
It was a process.
And every now and again, it will be or appear to be a single question, and I also want to add that
mm-hmm.
into this. It'll appear
mm-hmm.
to be a single question,
mm-hmm.
but it's not.
Mm-hmm.
We have a fairly reductionistic world that has us tend to look for a single cause and effect, whether it's what
mm-hmm.
caused your heart operation, what caused your weight to go, what caused
mm-hmm.
you to be fired. We look for a single point so that what we can do then is attempt to control that thing from ever happening again if we get mastery of that single point.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a misperception. Everything is interconnected.
Mm-hmm.
And everything collects and gathers and then coalesces into a moment.
Mm-hmm.
In the same way, all of the elements of a stew in and of themselves don't make the stew. It's that combination of flavors blending together at the time that they do that really has it work.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Pam. One other thing to know about Sudoku, for those people, you know, I'm not expecting anybody to be really fascinated about it, but one of the things to know is that it is a process of perceiving what goes in. What's the next box that needs to be filled in? So let me give you an example. And it could probably, in the simple one, with the four ones and threes, be several, but I can point to it from a particular place. Okay? Now, in the Sudoku, it's basically it all needs to have one through four in each of the squares, you know, et cetera. What happens when you play is that you start to see, if I put this number in here, then now all of a sudden that's revealed what the next number has to be, the next place that I need to work. And it's the same with the coaching process. As something moves in there, now all of a sudden the next recognition shows itself, which is why it's an improvisation rather than a linear experience. So let me just check in with people. How is this whole, the solution is already there, playing for you?
Michael, this is Margie. Mm-hmm. And really, it's what's coming up for me is we know what that solution is. It's already in us.
Mm-hmm. So
we just need somebody, an outside being, to help us see that, in a sense.
Yes. And there are two things that I want to share about that. One of my former clients did his PhD on coaching and the effect it had on people, and he put it succinctly that coaching helps one escape the circularity of their own thinking.
Mm.
And I thought that was perceptive.
Who said that?
Then who said it?
Yeah.
It's a former client of mine, and his name is Paul Dunn, D-U-N-N. So,
can you say it one more time?
Yes, coaching helps one escape the circularity of their own thinking. Cool, huh? Now, the other thing is the principle of anamnesis, and you can look this up and Google it, but it's Socrates' perception that each one of us is born into the world with all the wisdom of life we ever need. And upon the trauma of birth, we promptly forget it and then spend the rest of our lives discovering what we already knew. Now, I'm not talking about, local knowledge, like where's the pizza parlor, but principles of life. So he's saying we came programmed with them. And it wasn't so much as erase files as it kept this, like, limited access, which I also find fascinating for the coaching process in its assumption.
And who said that?
That was Socrates.
Oh. Hmm.
So that was also pretty cool in my estimation. And it also gave me a great frame to then approach the client in a different way. So, as I mentioned, it's a cumulative process. And part of it starts with listening, listening, and listening, and taming the wolf, what one listens for. That's what wolf stands for. Because the wolf sees the food of a client scenario, and they go, oh my God, let me eat that. Look at the problem. I'm going to go solve it. That means then that the presence that the coach is exhibiting is one of a, all I'm supposed to do is solve the problem presence. That makes it strategic and tactical only. It doesn't recognize that there's actually a bigger game to play, and that is in the evolution of consciousness in the person that you're working with. And we'll get a little bit more to that in a couple of minutes as we revisit who versus what. What I want to do is play a little game just now. And I want you to just sort of think about these and see how many of these apply to you, okay? That where you listen from in a normal conversation is. If you listen from what's an opportunity for you to make a point? If you listen from what the problem is so you can help fix it, if you listen from listen for a pause in the conversation so you can jump in, if you listen for a place where you can insert a belief or a teaching that you think is going to be valuable, if you listen from the place where you get to say, yep, see, I'm right. Listen, by the way, if you have a mate or a partner, that everybody's got that one. If you listen from the place that says, let me show my expertise and my value, okay? Or if in a conversation you listen for a place where you can gracefully exit. So let me just get a little bit of feel for people in the room about how many of those were parts of the experiences of listening for you.
This is Karen, Michael.
Yes.
Shamefully, probably all of them at some point.
Yes.
That's why I'm here.
Yes, I was actually.
Hey, Karen. This is Pam, and I'll join. I'll confess with you too, not alone.
Okay, thank you, Pam.
I'll confess too. Yes. That's all right.
I'll have to put my hand up also. So yeah, it depends on the situation, but you know, one or more of them could come up at any time, really.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Me too.
I once did this at a workshop, and I started to write them on a flip chart. Some guy just raised his hands, and he said, just put them all down. They're all me. It doesn't matter. Don't even bother going, you know, checking.
Now, are you giving us a handout with all that whole list?
Oh, yes. Yep,
okay.
I will. That'll be at the resource board.
Okay, good.
Yes. Now, imagine then as this kind of regular life, and we spend more of our life in just regular life than we do in coaching, how it can infect, almost like a virus, our listening in a coaching scenario. So the coach may be listening for where is the place that I can add value in this moment? Where is the place, you know, that I can make a difference with this client? Where, you know, listening for whether or not they're getting upset so that they don't they can avoid that kind of event. It's our job to shift our relationship to the listening. And this is what our presence is about, coaching presence, because everything we do in a coaching interaction emanates from presence. And we're going to do, when we get into session four, we're going to talk about the distinction between container and portal for coach as presence. But the place for us to go to work with respect to having masterful questions or masterful direct communication, doesn't matter what it is, masterful coaching, first and foremost is presence. The cleaner and clearer we can have that presence be, the more powerfully things can come through us. So I know a number of you know all of this. I'm reminding you again of hit the ball, throw the ball, catch the ball, run. But presence is even there. If I don't have the presence in baseball to stay both present and have the presence of a professional with a certain level of mastery of my skills, then I'm not much use to the team. Okay, so here's one thing. There's an entire list in everybody's training about what you need to listen for. Listen for belief, listen for this, listen for values, listen for X, Y, and Z. Okay, we're getting a little feedback again. Okay. Still there? Okay. But this is one of the things.
There's an entire list in everybody's training about what you need to
the person who's generating the feedback, if they go to the slides and hit the button that says synchronize slides with phone, that'll go away.
Thank you. Thank you, Connie. Mm-hmm. Okay, with a K?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is something is not something that I'm going to present to you, this phrase, listen for the question your client needs you to ask. It's not an activity. It's actually like embedding it in your presence. The client comes to you seeking certain questions that are going to move them, because the essence of their self knows that this person over here does not live in the circularity of my thinking. They're going to offer me a different perspective, and part of that different perspective is going to come through the questions they ask. So much like the ancient Greeks went to the oracle, you know, asking the question, you know, for them, they need you to ask particular questions. And it's not about being right in what the question is. It's actually about presencing the question that is already being called for, that fulfills and prompts the solution that is already existing.
Can you repeat that, please?
Probably not. Only not out of any sort of like perverse, but they come to us for a question that this moment and scenario and situation is being called for, that is going to call the solution through them, the solution that already exists. You'll be able to get this from the recording.
I think they come to us for answers, don't you think?
No, answers are a dime a dozen. All we have to do is go up to the internet for answers. There's 50 million answers to anything. You go up to the internet, somebody wants to lose weight, there's 50 million answers about how to lose weight.
Yeah, but don't they want the personalized, I don't mean to play devil's advocate, but don't they want the personalized answer? I mean, I've had people constantly ask me questions, so they're looking for the answer, but then what you're saying is we have to ask them masterful questions to get them to come up with the solution. Is that what you're saying?
Not in all situations. Sometimes they will want answers. However, the question is really about where the answers come from in you. And so most of the time the questions, it's interesting. Is there a person on the planet who doesn't know that losing weight, for example, is a function of exercise and the foods you eat? Really? Anybody who actually wants to lose weight, do they not know that those are two of the factors? They don't come to you for those answers. They come to you for a presence. And this is one of the things that I'm going to talk about more about in session four, but we might as well put it here. They come to you for a presence that is so invested in their transformation that the energy expression of that comes through the relating, whether it's answers and questions, and it shifts their presence. And so, because they can get those answers anywhere. And so what happens is that, and this may be challenging in some ways, I'm going to ask you all to hold the paradox of what I'm about to say. We're way ahead, but that's fine. It's what's called into the room. Please hold the paradox that the questions and direct communication that we give to people are necessary in the scenario with the client. And they are also the stuff that keeps the mind busy long enough for your presence to be able to transform and evoke and call through them a different presence. The energetic presence of you believing in them, wanting to have a better life out of your intention, and seeking to have them have the transformation that they are most seeking. That energy is more powerful than any question you'll ever ask them. However, something has to keep the mind busy long enough, because the mind's a player in the game. So we have to ask questions that will sometimes help people connect to that presence a little bit more. We may have to give reflections and observations and perspectives that help them get there. But ultimately, it's the energetic presence of your presence, which is why coaching presence is such a powerful piece of the coaching interaction. Masterful questions is not a head game. It's a full being experience of presence. So, I know that's a lot. So what I'd like to do is just ask you, maybe even some people who haven't shared yet, how what I've just said is resonating in you.
Well, this is Connie with a K, and for me it resonates quite a bit. My experience coaching and being coached is that is true, and that it's actually the energy that's generated by the two people that are focused together with an intention. It's that environment that's created. That's where the powerful questions come from. That's where everything comes out of. But it's because that environment has been created with presence. And I know what it's like when I'm not fully present. and when I am fully present, and it makes a really big difference in just how in that moment it's the piece that's the most important.
This is Carly. I didn't capture your quote, but I'm going to, when I listen to it later, about clients come to you for a presence that shifts their presence. That's the sort of what I got. And as someone who is really studying presence right now, with my mentoring for coaches, and just what really distinguishes being a masterful coach, and that is such a wonderful frame to have. I'm sort of like processing that. I just love it.
Great. Yeah, I learned about the impact of presence very early on in my coaching career when I was coaching rock bands. It was before executives and everybody else. But I coached the very first rock band I coached for 8 hours a day, one day a week, for almost a year and a half. So there was a lot of activity. And I would introduce different things. I was also mentoring, teaching them as well, things that I had learned from the acting world about performance, et cetera. And that year and a half later, and they were very, very successful, which led me to an even more successful work with another rock band. I asked the leader of the band, and I said, so what was it that really made a difference with you? And I'm over there thinking, and this was early on, I'm thinking, wow, it was my great insightful questions, or it was the exercises that I put people through, or the processes, or the direct communications kind of stuff. I'm thinking, it's all that. And he said to me, he says, well, some of the exercises were cool. Some of them were really lame. He says, but the one thing that really stands out to me, and I still get moved by it because it was such a genuine, authentic response. He said, the one thing that stands out to me is that you believed in us when no one else would. And I have to tell you, I never spoke those words. I believe in you guys. I believe you can make it. Never. He got that from how I showed up. Because it was always in the background for me. I always did believe in them and believe that they could succeed in ways that were important and meaningful to them. And I learned a lot from coaching them. And that's when I first got the inkling that it was more than just the stuff we do in the coaching interaction. It is what's born out of the presence of that interaction. So, I want to share one thing. Actually, I need to do this as part of the ICF agreement, which is in order to get the CEUs, one of the ways to do that is to include in the live thing so that people can, I don't know, it looks like you were there. Anyway, I'm going to be giving three little bits that I'm going to ask you to gather and collect. And then when you want to get your CEU certificate at the end, you just send me an email with these. So I'm going to give you three of these per class because it's a 90-minute class. I've already missed the 30 mark, but that's okay. So just for the sake of that, the first one is, what was contextual shift number one? Okay, that's all you need to do. Just write, know what contextual shift number one was. And you know what? You can revisit the recording, but guess what? That's what it is. Okay, so put that as one of the three things. And let me just check in with you again. Is there anyone else who wants to share something about what it was that we've just been talking about with respect to presence?
I do, Michael. It's Molly.
Hi, Molly.
Hi. I was really never aware until coaching that I never listened to anybody. Because I was so busy thinking of the next thing I was going to say.
Yes. That's perfect.
Because I wanted to appear brilliant and smart and wonderful and talented and all those wonderful adjectives. But it didn't work in coaching. It really didn't. Because I didn't know what the heck they were saying. Because I was so busy thinking, what question am I going to ask them? And then when I was in the beginning of coaching, and we were handed a list of all these questions, I thought, holy tamale, I have to keep this in front of me when I'm coaching someone, and then I've got to look real quickly to see which question I'm going to ask them from this list. Really distorted there, aren't I? So, however, one day in my life, I took a webinar from this man, and I got it. But it took practice. It takes a lot of practice to be able to be so present that the bomb could fall and you wouldn't hear it. It was hard work for me.
Yeah. And it's worth it, isn't it?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Is it ever?
Yes.
In my daily existence also, even with friends, you know, with anyone, I really listen.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Would it be okay to say something?
Sure, go ahead.
So this is Connie with a C.
Hi.
What I'm thinking about, though, is that how many of us, I mean, know how to listen unless we really make it in an intention or a decision that, okay, we need to become better listeners.
Yes, that's absolutely accurate. We think that just because we have heard words all our lives, we know how to listen.
I mean, does our society encourage people to become good listeners? I don't know.
I don't think so.
I
don't think so. I think actually most of the problems of the world would probably go away if we were actually much better listeners.
Yeah.
Cool. So, moving on. Okay, so I'm just going to ask everybody, this is a closed eye process. All right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to ask you to listen. So just listen. Make sure your phone is on mute if you can. And this is contextual shift number two. I'll present a slide for it in a minute, but just listen. What I'm going to ask you to do is to just listen to these words as if this was how your coach saw you. Okay? As if they were communicating this to you. The person I am coaching is unique, intelligent, knows how to complete things, knows how to focus, is capable, is an adult, knows how to solve problems, knows how to learn, is imaginative and creative, knows how to accomplish, knows how to be clear, is courageous, resilient, and strong. They know how to be personally accountable, know how to be responsible for their own life. They're competent in the world, know how to provide for themselves, has their own sense of order, values, and principles, has their own inner compass, has or can get what they need, has their own organizing principles and process, has a unique dream, vision, or goal, or many of them. The person I am coaching is whole. So now I'm just going to ask you to feel into all of those words and feel what it's like if that's how I saw you. And looking through that lens, yourself, if you saw you that way, what would you be capable of? Who'd like to share?
Anything? Capable of anything.
Yeah. Anyone else? How did those words, the idea that someone would see you that way, how does that make you feel? How do you feel out of that?
This is Karen. Really
mm-hmm.
deeply honored.
Hmm. Nice. Anyone else?
Well, and because we've been using the Sudoku puzzles, I feel as a metaphor, it feels like I would be or I am capable of revealing the solution that is right there in front of me.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you are capable of perceiving that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Absolutely. This is the contextual shift number two with respect to masterful questions, because without these assumptions, we have other assumptions of people being fixed, wrong, broken, mistaken, limited, all of those things, none of which serve. This is also a part of coaching presence, to presence these, not just sit there and think, oh, yes, they know how to be creative. No, it's part of the energetic presence to approach someone from this place. Now, the question isn't whether or not it's there, because I can actually prove that anyone is there in everyone who is a coaching client. I can prove that it's in everyone who's on this call. However, the question is whether or not we are using all of these qualities and more to optimal expression and capacity. That's a different question, and that's where coaching lives. But you cannot still be on the planet without knowing how to do all these things or having these qualities. Somewhere along the line, you would have shot yourself in the foot and game over. You wouldn't still be here if you didn't have this to some degree. It's already there. Is it fully expressed? Is it fully utilized? Maybe not necessarily all the time. Is it utilized in all situations where it might be valuable? Maybe not necessarily. However, is it there? Yes. It's part of the wiring. So let me ask this. If you were operating from this frame, how would that change how you interacted with a client?
Can I say something?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. So we would have tremendous success.
Yeah.
With them. I mean, they would just, like, shine.
Absolutely.
But to be honest with you, I'm just sort of thinking, gee, that would be nice if, you know, everybody related to you that way.
I mean, wouldn't it?
That's why we need coaches, so because we don't get this from other people, all of that.
Exactly. Exactly. It's why
Michael,
coaches.
This is,
yes, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Libby, and what comes up for me is it takes us out of our circular thinking.
Hmm. Huh. Yes. Absolutely, it would take you out of your circular thinking. Because now...
Which is how we get stuck.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I have sometimes thought that part of the coaching job, a prime part of the coaching job, is to return us to our full recognition of our full capacity. Because somewhere along the line, we forget or we get it knocked about and we diminish it or, you know, whatever it is. But we don't see ourselves completely. We see ourselves sometimes through a kind of Picasso lens, you know, with a little sideways face and that sort of stuff. And just as a preview in our next session, what we're going to be addressing is subtracting the interference, the static, the things that obscure, helping our clients subtract that so that they can see themselves. One of those things will be through questions. One of those things will be through perspectives. One of those things will be through some other tools that I have for you. Because if we live in the full expression of these respectful assumptions, as was stated, I feel like I could do anything. And so maybe part of our job is to just return people to themselves and the full expression of it. Cool. So, contextual shift number 3, which is coaching the who versus the what. And again, I just want to have you hold the frame of today's session. I know a lot of you know this, but I just want to remind you of what you already know so that you can deepen this and take it from an intellectual understanding and the knowledge of the data points about deeper into your coaching presence. So the client presents a lot. They show up with a situation, a challenge, or an obstacle, a crisis, you know, another situation, a new project, a coworker conflict, any number of other things. And each one of them is like a thread in a spider web. They're going to present you with a thread. The bait is to work on the thread. That's the seduction. It's kind of like throwing chum behind a boat for the shark. The shark's going to go for the chum, unless he's in jaws in which he's going to eat the boat. But nevertheless, the seductive quality, the siren call of going for the thread they're presenting is very powerful because we have a solution-oriented society that has programmed us for many, many years to name the problem, let me go fix it. It's a trap. Because when you think of it, you're only working on one thread of the web of that person. And they're spinning other threads all the time, which means you're always going to be behind. The simpler, more powerful place to work is in who the client really is. which, like the spider, going to the spider that is then weaving all of the threads. And if you can shift what's going on in the spider, then every thread they weave will experience a shift. Which means your coaching will help them be in a moment-to-moment, more successful relationship to every thread they weave. And it'll ripple out through the entire web.
So, Michael, is this the time I can ask a question?
Absolutely.
So who versus what is, you know, I find one of the hardest things that to understand, really understand what coaching the who is.
Mm-hmm.
Are you able to just really de-jargonize that into what does that really mean? I understand it's the spider, not the web, but can you give a practical example?
Yeah. And it actually goes back to what we were just talking about with respect to reminding people about who they are and what they're really fully capable of.
So can I just say, let's say a client comes, say, you know, let's just make up a situation. You know, a client comes to coaching to, I don't know, avoid, let's say because they're having a difficult time with their manager and they've been given coaching because they need to work out how to work better with their manager, and they call it coaching, but, you know, it looks like there's a situation to solve here and it looks like it's remedial. I mean, how would you turn that into, like, coaching the who and not the what?
Okay, so the person who's coming to me is the person who the coaching has been paid for, but they didn't necessarily elect it?
Let's say that the client actually sought you out as a coach.
Okay.
Let's get the company out of it, because that presents another whole set of situations.
Yes, it does.
Let's say they said, look, I want coaching. I've heard coaching is great. I don't like working for my manager, and he is the reason I'm not getting promoted. And so that's the what.
Yes.
Now, if I was to coach the who, what might be some of the things that I would be coach? What would that mean?
Okay, well, one of the things that I would be curious about is what does this person, let's see, what's the best way to put it? If I could put it as you for a moment, it's easier for me to do it in a direct. Would that be okay?
Yeah.
Okay. So then I would ask something that was akin to, in this scenario with your boss, what values do you want to be true to as you work out how to handle it?
Yeah, but he's the problem. I'm not the problem. He's the one that needs to change, not me. Because, you know, I'm doing a great job.
And yes, I hear that. However, I'm not coaching your boss. I'm coaching you.
Maybe he needs a coach too.
Well, that may well be. However, you've called me to coach you.
Okay.
So this is about you sorting through this situation, which is probably not the first situation that you'll come up with as a challenge in your life. So what I'm curious about is, you're going to have many ways that you'll come up with to solve this. What I really want to know is, what do you want to stay true to? And what's important to your sense of self in how you handle things?
Ooh, that's good. I like that. Okay, so that, I get it.
Yes. Because what I want to do, is connect the person to themselves and what moves them and what's meaningful for them in the larger context of their life. And if I can connect them deeply enough to how they their sense of self and what's important to them, then they will act in congruence with that, even if it means quitting.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, over the course of time, acting in congruence with who we are is going to serve us in a larger sense. Because probably, if he took the job, I mean, this is, again, this is a scenario we're playing here, but probably if he took the job, there was somewhere along the line he wasn't being congruent with himself in the first place for taking the job with a person who is like that.
Right.
Yes.
So he's been disconnected from a certain sense of self in the first place.
Again, this is a scenario we're playing here, but probably if he took the job, there was somewhere along the line he wasn't being congruent with himself in the first place for taking the job with a person who is like that.
Mm.
Right. So
can you do something about that, Michael, or not?
I'm trying to find the mute for that. If you are listening to it via your speaker, please put yourself on mute.
There is an individual. You should be able to see which person that is by going to the panel, the admin panel. You should be able to see where the noise is coming from, but maybe we need to test that.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It seems like it's okay now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so,
thanks. I don't want to take you off track, but, I often as a mentor that who versus what is jargon, and I just love that you took it into, I mean, that depth of question. Would you even ask that, like, right up front? Do you think anybody is ready for that type of question?
If they're not ready for that type of question, they're not ready to coach with me.
Got it.
It's in the interview process when we had the kind of like meet and greet, sniff each other, I informed them that we're going to go deep at times.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're not willing to do that, then I'm not the person for them to coach with.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I hear it and I see it, I can't not do it. I'm not being of service to them in my fullest capacity.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Now, I do want to say there's a caveat to this, which is one could hear that question from the point of view of it seeming like it's being directive. I'm pointing to, go look at your true values, look at your connection to yourself, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm in the process, and this is the distinction of it, and especially for master coaching level, MCC level in the ICF. One of the distinctions is that it's where the question is coming from. So if it's because I think it's a good idea that they do that, that's going to be about my agenda. If I am genuinely curious about finding out how this person operates, that's something completely different. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So the shift in the presence, again, distinguishes between how a question is heard and experienced, the presence and where that question is coming from. Cool. So let's keep it flowing. So this is just going to be a brief review. Question construction. Questions are built to be useful or unuseful. Useful questions have an intention that serves the client. Unuseful questions do not. Pretty simple, yeah? Everybody knows this. But I'm just reminding you, there's two aspects to useful questions. What's the purpose, intention, et cetera, and what's the structure? How is it built? Okay, what's it designed to do? There is a whole bunch of unuseful questions because of the experience they create in the client that kicks them backwards rather than has them present something forward. And this is the list of those things, interrogating them, accusing them, confronting them, leading them into it, where were you on the, impugning them, pigeonholing them. All of those kinds of questions have a particular energy to them that is about essentially a power move between the person asking and the person receiving the question. And that's about manipulation and control. Those are unuseful questions, because when you have gotten those questions asked of you in your past, whether it was by mom or a teacher or a manager, you have gone into a defensive reaction, in which case you're not open, you're busy surviving. That's what those kinds of questions will do. Another aspect of question construction, and we're going to dive into all of this even more, is open-ended and closed-ended. And by the way, tell me more is not a question, it's a statement. Open-ended questions are pretty obvious, you know. However, I want to clarify this, because a lot of people walk into questions with the societal collusion, I'll put it this way, the convention that someone, if I ask them a question, they're going to speak further. But I will say that the questions, when someone asks me a yes or no question, I'm going to give them, in most cases, a yes or no answer. So there will people say, so do you have any other options? With the assumption that because I've had the word options in that question, structurally, they're going to come up with those other options. Now, they may, just because we're programmed to do that kind of thing when we hear the word options, but they may not. And then you have to ask another question to get at what you were really asking. So when somebody asks me, do you have any other options, I might just say, yes. Have I answered the question? As it was constructed? Absolutely. I could have answered no. I might have even answered maybe. But in the case of any of those three perfectly valid answers to that question, what's built in? Now I have to ask another question. When what I really wanted to find out is, from where you're standing, what options do you see? If they say none, that opens up a different place for us to go. But they could then, actually, on the other direction of it, start to list all of the options they see. So if it starts with things like, is it, will you, can you, do you, have you, all of that sort of stuff, that's the front-end structure of a closed-ended question. Now, closed-ended questions aren't bad. They're very useful when used topically and specifically. We just sometimes mistake their use for what's really valuable in the moment. We'll get more into how those look, but I just wanted to plant the seed of that kind of distinction between the questions. Time to play. So, what I'm, going to invite you to do, because we're going to do this periodically, I'm just going to present a line or two of a scenario, and I just want to go around the room and give you some practice. And then once you've, what I'm going to ask you to do is, once you've heard my statement, I'm going to ask you to write down your question, because we're going to take a look at it and see what it was constructed to do. Okay? So here's a statement. I've recently become aware that it is appropriate, in fact, ideal or optimal, for me to expand my presence in the world, my range and reach, to be global high profile, in order for me to accomplish what I see is a contribution in the world. My challenge is how to do that in the most efficient manner. While not sacrificing quality for expedience. So, what question do you have for me? Take a moment, sit in your presence, and when you're ready to write the question down, write the question down. Look at it. Feel into the question and what I've said. And then I'll go around the room and ask. I'm going to give just a couple of minutes to do this. There's no hurry. We have time. Okay?
That was quite a mouthful. Would you like to
repeat that
whole statement?
I can give you the essence of it.
Okay.
The essence of it is that it's clear to me that it's time in my life to expand my presence in the world, both range and reach, in size and scope, and in level of profile, in order for me to make the kind of contribution that I see in the world. Okay? My challenge is how to be, and I'll even add this adjective, exceedingly efficient at it while not sacrificing quality for expedience. Basically, I just don't want it to turn, I just don't want to have the whole process be crap while I'm trying to have it happen fast. Okay? So let me just... Let me just put you on pause there for a minute and hold that.
Can I just ask you something about that?
Oh. Sure.
Well, so the question that we come up with is what we would say.
What you would ask me if you were my coach.
Okay, yeah, all right.
Thank you.
By the way, your statement sounds like where I'm at.
Okay, let's rock. Let me hear the questions. I'd like to hear from everybody. Let's play.
Okay, well, this is Margie, and I wrote down the question, and then I'm looking at when we first started, a really well-constructed question. I was trying to figure out how to construct it better, but okay, I can't anyway. So what came up for me when you said it again, and I could actually process that like really long sentence, is the first thing that came up for me is what does exceedingly efficient mean to you?
Okay, great. So I'm just going to record these. What does exceedingly efficient mean to me? Because I'm going to get coaching here free. Yeehaw! Okay. Thank you. Who's next?
So, Michael, this is Karen.
Mm-hmm.
The question that came to my mind, what thoughts have you already had around this so far?
Okay. Good. around this, okay? All right, who's next?
This is Connie with a C. So I actually came up with four questions.
Well, pick one.
Well, three of them go together, though.
Actually, all of them go together. Yes, I understand that. However, when we offer, and this is one of the things to also revisit for everybody, is that when we offer a stack of questions, the client is going to ask the one most likely that is easiest for them to the one that is most likely easiest for them to answer. So if you happen to have a more confronting one in the stack of four, they're gonna seek to avoid that one. And then the second thing that's going to happen is sometimes they'll get confused and go to the spot, okay, so you just presented me with four questions. Which one do I answer?
Yeah, okay. All right.
Okay, so just take a moment, revisit, and let me pick up somebody else, and then revisit which, if there was one question you had to hang your hat on in this moment in time, what's the one out of those four? Okay? Cool. Let me just take another person, then we'll come back to you, Connie, with C.
This is Molly.
Mm-hmm.
What are the values you perceive necessary to align your presence in the world?
What are the values I perceive necessary
to align
my presence? Yep.
To align with your presence in the world.
To align with my presence in the world. Okay.
This is Carly.
Yep. Yep.
What's the impact you desire to have as a result of being high profile?
Okay. I desire to have as a result of being high profile. Okay. And Connie with the C, are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So once you've expanded your presence in the world, what exactly would that look like?
Okay, once I've expanded my presence, what exactly would that look like, okay?
Michael, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Ready? Okay.
Yep.
What are the strengths that you've relied on before when you were exceedingly efficient that you could amplify?
Strengths have I relied on before? Okay.
Michael, it's Mickey. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, This is really going over and over in my mind. And when I don't see the big picture, I go to my gut. And I think that if this, I've been working with this client, I might respond first by saying, wow, this is big. And I'm curious about what incident or what occurred that gave you this awareness at this time.
Okay. What occurred that gave me this awareness at this time? Okay, good.
Michael, this is Ron.
Hi, Ron. Glad you're here.
Hi. Yeah, good to be here. I was listening online, and then I just dialed in so I could participate. But,
great.
You know, I was thinking about this in terms of this client, you know, and saying, you know, who might you become as your global profile, you know, becomes more high profile in the world in an efficient manner, while not sacrificing quality? So who might you become as your global high profile expands, you know, while you do this in an efficient and a quality way? So I'm after that who part.
Right. Okay.
Well, and that, maybe I should rephrase that. I'm curious about how they might describe themselves at the who level.
Okay, that would be a secondary question, perhaps. Okay. Okay.
This is Pam.
Yes.
I've just asked this directly. I couldn't think of a better way of framing it, but it's who do you need to be in this process to stay true to yourself and your vision But there's a very strong vision here. And then there's a process to be gone through.
Okay. All right.
This is Connie. When you use the term exceedingly efficient, what aspects of the process are you wanting to optimize?
Oh, okay. All right. Is that everyone? Cool. So, we'll come back and revisit these questions. And what I may do is see if I can answer them individually, each one. However, what I want you to do is to take a look at the question you wrote down. See what it's designed to do. Is it focused on the who as well as the what? The what being a subset of the shift in the who? Is it operating from a respectful assumption? Is it with the recognition that there is a solution already present and we're just looking for what the thing is that needs to be perceived or seen in order for it to just be shown? What else is it designed to do? You know, what assumptions are inherent in the question? What's the structure, and how does that structure create the experience that's being built for the client? Okay, so. Wow, we've gone into the, you know, it sounded like the old hand cranking copier.
Oh, I'm sorry.
A mimeograph machine. Okay. So now this is taking it forward from here, and then I'm just going to go briefly around the room. I'm going to ask you to revisit the questions I first asked you in the email and see what, if anything, has shifted in your own answers to those questions. Second is, what will you subtract that will have your questions and interactions be naturally transformational? Helping shift from chrysalis to butterfly. Okay? Then the third is, as you hear questions around you, just start studying other people's questions. Make this your immersion to just go, so wait a minute. He asked that and she gave them that answer. What was that question designed to do? Oh, I see. And when you're asked questions, see what happens inside you. Not just what's the answer you give, but what got triggered, what got connected, what got pushed, what got touched. Because question experience is a full being experience. It's not just, it doesn't just go into the Google search of our mind. Not if it's going to be masterful. It needs to go there, yes, but it also needs to go into our heart and spirit being. If it's going to be something that is acted on with sustainable congruence. So, out of today, and by the way, if you need to listen to all of that again about what to do, it's on the tape. It'll be on the recording. So, out of today, what, I'll put it this way, what pinged your computer about your own movement and what you can do?
This is Margie. I love the whole process of deconstructing and constructing questions.
It's great because once you go through the mastery of the basic foundational structure of it, it then becomes second nature inside, and you can improvise because your mind understands what creates the question. So you won't be sitting there thinking you have to make it work. It's like understanding what goes into building a building. Once you know basic construction, you can have a mansion on there or you can have an outhouse. It doesn't matter. Your inspiration can be fulfilled because you have the internal mechanism that is aware of the means whereby that inspiration gets presenced. Cool. Who's next?
This is Pam.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I wrote lots of stars on my notepad when you said this, but you said, you know, you can ask the same question, but it's all about where you're coming from when you ask it. You said, you know, if you're a masterful coach, it's, are you asking it because, you know, you're genuinely curious, or is it, you know, a good idea? And that whole thought about it can be the same question, but it's how you pitch it, to use the baseball analogy. It's where it comes from. And that was very profound.
It comes from.
Yeah.
Cool.
That was really profound. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hi, this is Mickey.
Mm-hmm.
And it all goes back to presence. And just yesterday, I was on a practicing coaching for mastery course. They said, what do you want me to look for? I said, to make sure that if you feel I'm really present. I know how important that is, and I think that the questions are born out of being really present. And when I'm searching for questions, I know I'm not with my client.
Absolutely. If I'm sitting there thinking about what's the best question right now? What's the right question right now? What if I ask the wrong question? I'm in my head, in my experience, because I'm not with the client. Perfect.
Yeah.
Great. How about
great
a couple
reinforcement.
More?
This is Karen. So I'm taking away the acronym WOLF and to be really focused moving forward of what am I listening for, and just bringing that, becoming very present to just that one thing.
Great. The hint on the WOLF is that each of the things that we're listening for has an internal need or hunger, as I would put it, that is seeking to be served. If you can address the hunger and subtract the hunger from being served, it will become an organic absencing of that listening instead of a disciplined reminder about not listening for that.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hi, Michael. This is Ron. For me, the takeaway is the notion of, you know, asking masterful questions that can, in fact, keep the person you're coaching their mind busy.
Yes.
To a point where your presence can sponsor the space and enable them to shift their energy and get into their own presence.
Yes.
Ron, this is, and Michael, this is Libby. That was exactly what, I love that concept. Yeah.
Now, it doesn't mean that we don't have to be masterful in keeping the mind busy. We do. That's what the questions and direct communication, that sort of stuff is for.
Oh, yeah.
And we need to be masterful in that. So it's not just we give up that and go, oh, yeah, I'm going to sit here and, like, presence you.
No, but then the questions, right, the masterful questions keep, you know, allow that person to go deeper into their own presence, like connecting with themselves.
Yes.
Absolutely. Cool. Who else?
This is Connie with a C, and I'm not sure if I know what your question is that we're answering now.
What got pinged or triggered, or what's the thing that is most resonating with you to put into play that will help you shift your relationship to questions?
Okay.
Out of the call?
I'm going to answer this in a strange way. I was at an event over the weekend, and one of the speakers who knew me asked me a question in front of like 100-something people.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I'm not going to say what question it was, but that one question has just totally got me thinking for days. So she asked me the question on Saturday or Sunday, and I'm like still thinking about that one question. And I think...
Great.
One question, you know, even it was painful to hear, it was upsetting to think about, but I cannot get this question out of my mind, and it's literally going to change what I do next. It's going to impact what I do next. So I guess in thinking about asking questions in your clients is to ask some question that has kind of that lingering, haunting feeling where
yes.
you know that once you figure out how to answer it or what to do to answer it or whatever, or you figure out your answer. Because I've thought a lot about, well, what is my answer to her question? But that one question is having such an impact. I'm still
yes.
upset.
yes.
But it was a very important question. So I guess in working with clients, that'd be pretty cool to ask them that kind of a question that has this lingering, you know, thing where they just can't get the question out of their mind. If I can
yeah.
send it in such a way that I don't threaten them or put them on the spot the way that woman put me on the spot.
Well, that's again the being conscious of the environment, you know, in which one is asking that question.
Well,
so, yeah,
I mean, she knew
I'm totally with you.
She knew about me and my background, but still. But anyhow, if I can ask
yep.
that kind of a lingering question, that would be pretty powerful because that could totally impact that person's life.
Yes. Absolutely.
Michael, this is Libby, and I'm so sorry, but I've got to drop off.
Yep.
So
okay.
I hope I'll figure out how to get to the three nuggets, you know, to get my CEU, but I'll figure it out.
Oh, yes. The three nuggets, the other two nuggets. There was a picture of an animal on one of the slides. That's a tough one. And then the third one is just a number sequence, 17 plus 1.
I missed the second one. Because I was
second one is there was a picture of an animal on a slide.
Great. Thank you. It was a wonderful, wonderful start.
Great. Is there anyone else who wants to share? Okay, then. We'll see you next week and look for the recording tomorrow and do your homework. Bye, all.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank
Bye.
You.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.